Welcome to Celebrating Whole Health, a program focusing on remembering, reinvigorating, and creating a renaissance of relationship-centered whole person healthcare. Each week, we profile the work of a nurse dedicated to providing compassionate, patient-centered care. I'm your host, Georgiana Donadio, director of the New England School of Whole Health Education in Boston. Today, my guest is an outstanding holistic nurse, Dr. Lee Barbado-Gatos. She is an assistant professor at Beth El College of Nursing and Health Sciences of the University of Colorado. And in 1999, she was named the National Holistic Nurse of the Year. And in that same year, she also received the Nightingale Award for developing complementary pathways to new paradigms in nursing. Lee Barbados. Gatos, welcome. We're so thrilled to have you on the show. Good morning.
Well, good morning, and thank you very much for asking me.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. I'm terribly excited. I want to share with the audience that you have a remarkably unique offering that you bring to the holistic nursing table. And as we talk today and as we share so much of your wonderful work, I think they will be as excited about it as I am. Lee, you are so unique for so many reasons, and one of them is not only have you created this wonderful nursing, master's nursing program in holistic studies, but as well you are an artist and a therapeutic and creative artist who has integrated art into holistic nursing. So we have so much to talk about. Where would you like to begin? Would you like to start by talking about the wonderful program that you are involved with at Beth El College?
Well, yes, that would be a really good place to start. Beth El College of Nursing and Health Sciences is a very old school. We started in 1904. And in 1986, we went to a baccalaureate program, and Gene Watson was a consultant in that change to a baccalaureate program. Then we merged
nursing. So we have so much to talk about. Where would you like to begin? Would you like to start by talking about the wonderful program that you are involved with at Beth El College?
Well, yes, that would be a really good place to start. Beth El College of Nursing and Health Sciences is a very old school. We started in 1904. And in 1986, we went to a baccalaureate program, and Gene Watson was a consultant in that change to a baccalaureate program. Then we merged with the University of Colorado in 1996. And in the period between 86 and 96, we began a graduate program in about 1993, I believe it was. And as one of our options, well, we have two options, an NP and a CNS, so a nurse practitioner and a clinical nurse specialty. And as one of our tracks within the clinical nurse specialty, we do offer a holistic nursing clinical nurse specialty degree. So it's a Master of Science in Nursing, and then the option is clinical nurse specialty in holistic nursing.
Isn't that wonderful?
And that program involves a variety of courses that deal with health and healing and nursing, all from a holistic perspective.
And you created, I believe, one or more of those programs that actually brought in some of the work that you have been doing, which we want to get to almost as a separate subject. But you were sharing with me this wonderful coursework that has been integrated into this curriculum based on art and based on this co-creative aesthetics that you were sharing with me. Could you talk more about the particular actual program that you've integrated and created for this certificate program?
Okay, well, we have both the certificate program and the MSN. The MSN really is the one I think I want to talk about a little bit more. Of course, we meet all of the requirements for the essentials of a master's program in our basic courses for the master's degree. But beyond that, in holistic nursing, we offer four other courses. One, which is a theoretical and philosophical course called Dynamics of Unity, and one on neuroimmunology, and one on the use of therapies, energy therapies, and one on the use of therapies of the imagination. And so then there is a practice component where students identify a population that they want to work with, they identify a modality that they want to become expert in, and they implement their theoretical knowledge in the clinical setting, a variety of clinical settings, using a particular population and a particular modality.
Now, is this the creative journey component of
no,
the program?
No, creative journey is an undergraduate course. It's an elective. It was the very first course I ever started where I integrated art with nursing. It's I've taught it about every 2 years for many years until just recently. And it is really about helping nurses get in touch with their creative selves. And so we do, and also to help them, you know, renew and refresh themselves with their own creative work, and also to bring that creative impulse to the clinical setting, because, you know, nurses today and maybe always have to be very creative to do more with less, always and always.
Well, isn't that well said? We were talking when we spoke the other day about how important it is for us to embrace the whole person, and holism is about all of these components and these aspects, and spirituality does include the intuitive and the co-creative aspects that we're all blessed with when we come into this world. Lee, I want to go in so many different directions, but one of the parts of our conversation that really caught me, and I'm sure will be of great interest to the audience, is you told about your journey, which was the beginning of your holistic journey, to the best of your recollection, which was about 12 years ago, when in 1991, the incredible Joseph Campbell, his work really was life-changing for you as you watched the series of his programming that's so involved with so many of the mystical and spiritual components in understanding ourselves as human beings. I'd love for you to share with us again the experience you had in 1991 that brought you to make what you called a life-changing decision, and how it started you on this fabulous journey that you have continued on.
Well, okay. It actually started in the mid-80s when that series was aired on PBS. And I had the good fortune to accidentally, if you believe it, accident, to see this Joseph Campbell Power of Myth with Bill Moyers. And his whole approach to thinking about cross-cultural myth just really engaged me and caused me to think about how in the world I could stop living a divided life. I lived a divided life between nursing and art all my life. I couldn't seem to figure out how to pull those two things together. Through Joseph Campbell's work, especially the hero's journey, I began to think about how I would image the hero's journey in the context of the great questions of all cultures, which is, where do we come from, what are we doing here, and what are we going to do when we die? And so I did one piece that did the hero's journey within that context, and it got an amazing response from a studio art class that I was taking at the time, a graduate studio art class. And frankly, my artwork wasn't very good in that piece. And so what I realized was it wasn't so much the artwork as it was the story. And I began to think about maybe this was a way to pull my nursing and my art together. My background is mental health nursing, and mental health nursing is all about hearing people's stories. And so actually all nursing is about hearing people's stories.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought, okay, well, what would it look like to image my story? And I did that. And then a friend asked me to image her story. And through the process of helping her to come to terms with her own story and image that in a painting, I realized that here was how I could pull together my life and live an integrated and more authentic life. As a result of that decision, I had to make some other life-changing decisions. So in 1991, I left Texas, where I had been for 26 years, where I had established my career and had a home and friends and all of that, and came back to where I was born and really the home of my heart, which is Colorado.
Wow.
And I live in the mountains here. And found Beth El College of Nursing and our incredible dean, Dr. Carol Shostow, who had the vision to say, well, okay, she's a little odd, but I think we could use her on our faculty. And she has encouraged me to go ahead and pursue this really strange-headed beast that is both nursing and art.
Well, your story is so wonderful and inspiring, and it brings us to go in so many directions. You called what you were creating life journey portraits and ultimately biographical icons, which aren't they wonderful words for us to think about, biographical icons? And, I mean, as a nurse, I'm sure that for those listening are saying, wow, isn't that what we see every day? Isn't that what we're dealing with? You want to talk a little bit more about that?
Okay. Well, one of the things that I've realized is that whether I call them life journey portrait or biographical icon, I like biographical icon because it has that feeling of a sacredness that an iconography does. But regardless of the term, the experience of being with someone and asking them to tell me their story in whatever way they want, is so powerful. It's powerful for me, and people tell me that it's powerful for them. So that's what I do. I begin, usually it's the first interview is a 3-hour interview, and we begin with, tell me your story. People begin where they begin. And then I help them clarify which memories are the most self-defining. And out of those self-defining memories then, we choose metaphors and images and symbols that we think about pulling together into a single image. And so all of the pieces have a collage or montage-like feeling because memories are held that way. They're not held in like a little file cabinet. They're held in this more collage-like way with those self-defining memories as being most central.
And this is part of your current private practice that you're doing. And we're going to go to a break in just a moment, but just to recap, this work is not only part of this introduction and this awareness is not only part of the curriculum, but it's also part of the private practice that you're engaged in. And you shared a sentence with me, imaging self-defining moments. When we come back, we want to speak more about those self-defining moments. And we also want to talk about the wonderful dean of your program. You shared a lot about her, and she sounds fabulous. So we have to speak about those things. We're going to take a 2-minute break. Lee, we'll be right back, okay?
What do you get when you cross a ballerina with an insomniac? Someone who'll dance the night away. And that's what they're doing at a dance-a-thon put together by dancers and their community coalition to raise money for kids' after-school programs. And what do you get when people bring their groups together? Healthier, drug-free communities, especially for kids. So if you're involved with a group, contact your community coalition at healthyourcommunity.org or 877-KIDS-313. Because you get more when you get together. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
This is Sam Hornish Jr. As a champion IndyCar driver, I've had many proud moments, but one of the things I'm proudest of is being part of the Shriners. Shriners Hospitals offer kids with orthopedic problems or severe burns world-class medical care that's totally free of charge. And their centers of excellence combine progressive research and innovative teaching programs. There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
And we are back. Welcome back to Celebrating Whole Health, a program that is about celebrating the wonderful dynamics and aspects of holistic care, whole health care, and most importantly, our holistic nurses. We are talking to Dr. Lee Barbato-Gatos, who is a remarkable and fascinating person as well as artist and nurse. Lee, before the break, we were talking about imaging self-defining moments. And when we had our wonderful conversation the other day, you were talking about the psychosocial process, the process of discovery, that these particular collages and the process that they evoke, what that does for the individual. Can you run with that ball and tell us all about that? Because it's just something that each one of us, I know, would be probably very excited to do for ourselves.
Absolutely, I'd be happy to. I guess I should say just a little bit about this format. I did say that there's a 3-hour interview, and then about halfway through that interview, or maybe 2/3 of the way through that interview, we began to talk more in terms of symbols and metaphors. And then I do a rough draft of the life story, and I invite the person to come and change that rough draft in whatever way makes it more true for them. And when I'm doing these works, I have the tapes of our interviews playing in the background all the time so that that person is very present to me in the process, in the creative process. And then after they change the piece, I execute the final image. And one person told me that the final image is like a mirror to her, that she consults it, so to speak, every day, and it tells her something new about who she is. But the process I have actually named, called, termed it co-creative aesthetics. So the co-creative aesthetic process, because there is a very specific, there are very specific aspects to this process. There is an engagement, there is a mutuality, there is an exploration that is has movement through the process, and movement back and forth between me and the person that I'm talking with. There are moments when we find a new form, we find a metaphor, or we find a new insight, or we find an understanding of some sort, or an image perhaps. And those moments of new form are very exciting. And one new form that we may find, not every time, but often, is a sort of healing that takes place. And maybe even many times during the process, there can be an experience of healing. But this process, I have written about it, and I'm hoping it will soon be published. I've submitted it, and it's been sent to me for revision, and I've resubmitted, so I'm hoping it will be out there. I think that this process will speak to nurses because it's what we do all the time. All I have done is made visible what nurses do everywhere, all the time. I've made it visible in my in the images and in this process, which I've made a model of.
Well, what you've done is given flesh, or you've given some real tangible, hands-on way of manifesting the intent and the caring and the holism that nurses do practice. And I believe this is why you received the National Outstanding Holistic Nurse of the Year Award from the AHNA. Is that not so?
Yes, I think it was this work, and also the fact that, I mean, I got the credit, but it was really our dean that recognized that we needed to have some academic avenues to pull holism into advanced practice. So I think it was both the curriculum development, and which I did spearhead, but was only one of several people that worked on that, and the work that I do. I think it was kind of a double thing.
Right, but I think it speaks so well to the heart of so many nurses that this work was celebrated in such a way that you received this honor. And within the same year, and this is, wow, I mean, this is something. In the same year, you received the Nightingale Award for Developing Complementary Pathways to New Paradigms in Nursing. So not only were you recognized by the American Holistic Nurses, but the Florence Nightingale crowd, and that is quite a wonderful group, also recognized this incredibly holistic, spiritual, psychosocial, important contribution that you have made and continue to make to understanding nursing and for nursing to understand itself better. Do you want to talk about that award? Because that is that's a remarkable accomplishment.
Well, that award was quite a surprise. I had been nominated for the Nightingale Award. The Nightingale Committee here in Colorado is a wonderful group. They identify and recognize nurses who have excellence in clinical practice, who really exemplify the ideals of Nightingale. And but I didn't quite fit the criteria, because what I do is a little on the edge, actually a lot on the edge. And so they wanted to recognize my work, but they didn't know exactly how to do that, and so they just created this award for me.
Oh, wow. That makes it even more special.
It does to me.
Wow.
It does. Because I think the fact that they created something new is just a perfect example of the fact that my work is edgy, and I hope it does inspire the creative of other people.
Well, I'm sure you can say most definitively that it does and it will. I know I'm all excited about it, and I'm sure that there are many nurses who, like yourself, have an artistic soul. Mm-hmm. I think that many people who are creative are drawn to the healing arts. I think it's a wonderful kind of, you called it, you know, you struggled with the notion of living in two different worlds for a while, and you were having trouble coming to terms with almost being two different people. But I think that that is very common in the healing arts, mm-hmm. that we find people who sing, people who dance, people who write, people who in many different ways are creative people. And so I think you have given an enormous invitation and an enormous sense of acceptance and permission because of the work that you do. You're very out there, you're very mainstream, and you're very, you know, you're a forerunner in so many ways that you've invited and really permitted, I think, the nurse profession to say, I don't just have to be, you know, a clinical person, or I just don't have to be involved in relationship-centered care in a very defined way, that I can really push the borders here.
Well, actually, Georgia, I do presentations on this work in a lot of places, and my experience has been is that there are always people in the audience that talk about that same struggle that I've had of living this divided life and wondering how their art could inform their nursing and vice versa, or whatever field they're in. And in fact, I did a research study because I use this work as the basis for research into particular kinds of lives, and I had to develop a research method that took into account this symbolic data. But I did recently finished a study on five hospice nurses, and when I was soliciting the participants for the study, one of the nurses in the audience said that she had an epiphany. And she realized that this was a way that she could bring together those two halves of her own life. And she has taken this epiphany and turned it into the most amazing thing. She does wonderful pieces about her patients who have died, who have some way taught her something. And she uses this, she calls herself a visual journalist, and her name is Chris Hall. And she, her visual journal consists of a symbolic language of farm animals, because she's from farm country.
Wow, visual journalism. Isn't that
beautiful?
That's
what she called herself, a visual journalist. She said artist was too intimidating. But she is, of course, an artist. But that's just one example. I've also had students who have, I have a thesis student right now, two of them, who have both used their own art as a way of coming to terms with their research question. One person is looking at the experience of, Lisa Wayman is looking through the experience of self-transcending through suffering. She was actually, her son was actually a patient of Chris's. And then I have another thesis student who told, she's a pediatric nurse, and she told the stories of her participants in her study, children, their life stories, and she told them in a literary format, which was quite incredible. And those are just examples. I have another previous student who's now a colleague and friend who does poetry. And the four of us have actually gotten together and do presentations on the renewal of nursing passion, our passion for our work through the experience of art. And so we've had some fun with that presentation. Always when we present, people come and say, you know, I have the same desire, mm-hmm. and maybe there's some way for me to do this.
It's too wonderful. We're going to take a break in 2 minutes, but before we do, would you talk to, we'd love to hear more about your research with the five hospice nurses. Mm-hmm. What was that particular project about, Lee? I mean, why were you doing that research with the five hospice nurses?
Well, I have I did a little hospice work myself years ago, but I have always had a very fond place in my heart for hospice nurses. And one thing that I've always noticed is that when a person tells anyone that they're a hospice nurse, the response is almost inevitably, oh, you must be special. And I wondered about that. What is this specialness of hospice nurses? And my question really was, what is the life journey that leads a nurse to choose nursing when there is no hope of recovery? Most of us don't.
That's a really, really powerful and important question that we're going to invite you to talk to when we come back, because there are so many of us who have been in the healing arts for a very long time who would, I will tell you that I'm one of those people that would never want to immerse myself into hospice work because I feel that it would be far too painful. So there is something to be said about the specialness of people who can witness and process a person's dying experience in a way that is holy and meaningful. So when we come back, we're going to ask you to speak about that, and we look forward to hearing what you have to say. We're going to be back in 2 minutes, so don't go away.
Hello?
Hello, Mrs. Stewart. I'm calling about your gas bill.
I know. I'm late. I'm working two jobs and doing everything I can.
Of water, Mommy.
I'll be there in a minute, Lisa.
Mrs. Stewart?
I'm really trying here. It's just that things are a little difficult right now.
Do you have our address, Mrs. Stewart?
Yes, I do.
Heat or food? 1 in 5 American children faces hunger because of decisions like this. To help, call 1-800-FEED-KIDS or visit feedingchildrenbetter.org. Hunger, a choice no one should have to make. A public service message brought to you by America's Second Harvest, Feeding Children Better, and the Ad Council.
Do you know what a child who can't read grows up to be? A statistic.
I know I should read to my son more, but I'm just too tired.
Well, how tired will you be of getting notes from school that your child can't keep up with the class? 2 out of 3 African-American fourth graders are struggling to read. Reading to your child now for just 15 minutes a day can make a lifetime of difference. To get Read and Rise, a free booklet on how you can help your child become a good reader, call 1-866-522-READ. A public service message brought to you by the National Urban League and the Ad Council.
We're back again. Welcome to Celebrating Whole Health, a program that focuses on remembering, reinvigorating, and creating a renaissance of relationship-centered whole person care. I'm your host, Georgiana Donadio, the program director for the New England School of Whole Health Education in Boston. And today we have the pleasure of having Dr. Lee Barbato-Gatos, who is sharing with us her remarkable work as nurse, educator, and artist. Before the break, we were talking to Lee about hospice nursing, which, as all of you know, probably has the resounding admiration of the healthcare profession for the enormous compassionate work and just the mindful presence and the holy sacred work that these beautiful people do in hospice care. So Lee, we asked you to please talk about, you were talking about how special, the comment is how special all of this seems to the rest of us who are not doing it. Would you speak to that and share with us your stories?
Absolutely. I was able to work with Pikes Peak Hospice and Palliative Care here in Colorado Springs through the facilitation of the administration there. And there were five nurses that participated in a study, 9 that applied, but I was able to do 5. And the 5 nurses, I looked at each individual story, and every one of them was so incredibly powerful and imaged each story. And then I looked for a life pattern. Was there a life pattern in these journeys of the hospice nurses that led them to caring for people when there's no hope of recovery? And I did find a pattern in these lives, and I would like to share that with you. This has been written as a manuscript. I believe it will be published in the Journal of Hospice and Palliative Nursing sometime in the next year, at least, barring something I don't know about. Mm-hmm. But here's the pattern that was revealed. For each nurse, there was personal loss and grief prior to their hospice nursing experience. As an example, one person lost both of her parents before she was 17. Another person lost both of her parents at a very crucial time in her life when she was 30. Another person lost her whole dream of a family and of who she was as a woman. Another one was the 10th of 10th child of an Irish immigrant family and lost several of her siblings and her parents. And another person lost her husband just after the delivery of her 9th child.
Whoa.
So all of these people had had significant grief and loss prior to their hospice nursing experience. Each one of them demonstrated amazing endurance and resilience in the face of this loss and grief. Each one of them was transformed through their hospice nursing. And each one of them, for each one of them there was a strong spirituality throughout their lives. Although they didn't necessarily talk about an organized religion, there was this strong sense of the spirit in their lives. And they said the most wonderful things. Like one person said, it, Annie says, it, these are pseudonyms, it's such a privilege to be a hospice nurse. I think it has helped me, having been through grief and loss in my own family. And another person said about working with hospice patients that she says nothing will ever be the same. Nothing will ever be quite right again. But you can glue the pieces of your life together in a different way. Every nurse had the most amazing story to tell. But I think this gives us some information when we think about who should we recruit to hospice nursing. You know, how can we retain hospice nurses? How can we help students who are wondering where their own talents would best be used in nursing? This gives us some idea that people with this kind of a life pattern might be very successful hospice nurses.
What a fascinating research project.
It was.
I mean, to come up with that kind of information is not only important to the profession, but it's important, as you said, to the individuals who are considering this as a career path.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very meaningful, and we're delighted to hear that it's been published. And one of the comments...
Well, it will be.
It will be published. One of the comments that you made about privilege, isn't that the most consistent comment that not only nurses but people who work in hospice identify? They say, this is such a privilege. It's such a privilege to witness to people's passing. It's such a privilege to be with them in this stage of their life.
Absolutely, Georgia. It's interesting how many times that word was used, and how the whole tone of these interviews with the hospice nurses was of a gratefulness, of being allowed to participate in that last step in a life.
It's almost as if they have the privilege of witnessing the portal of passage.
Absolutely. Well put.
And it is something that, I not only admire, wish I had the skills to do so. It's such an important work, and we all have to deal with it, don't we? I mean, it's something we all really do have to deal with. But you were talking at the break when we took a little public service announcement break, and you mentioned two words that we will not let you leave without talking about, and that was partnership art.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to talk about that.
Yes. Susie Gavlik is an art critic and theorist that has written a book called The Reenchantment of Art. And in that book, she used a term that was so meaningful to me. She called for, from artists, the need for art which is in partnership with the rest of society. And I think my work is partnership art. The other person that used a language that is really key for me is Ellen DeSantayake, I hope I'm saying her name correctly, who wrote a book on why humans need art. And she said that art, making art, is a core behavioral tendency, just like attachment or aggression. And she called that tendency making special. And I believe that making special would be a wonderful definition for the art of nursing.
That was something that I was just fascinated about when you were originally sharing this with me. Making special as part of, isn't this so connected to the holism of caring and healing, that what we do with each other when we are in the healing process is we make ourselves, our experience, our process, and each other, the nurse to the patient to the nurse, we make that special. We create the art of relationship and make special. I think the work you're doing, I mean, I am just like so excited about this. To hear this articulated in this incredible way, using the metaphor of art to express and embrace the healing process. Lee, I think that this is magnificent work, and want to ask you to address the statement you made in my teaching. What I want is for students to value the art as well as the science. I want to see a language to talk about it developed.
Absolutely. There are many, well, there are quite a few nurses, I wouldn't say many, but quite a few nurses that have this as an interest, and there's some really great work being done in the whole area of aesthetics and nursing. But what I find is it is the aesthetics that bring people to nursing. I teach beginning level students as well as graduate students, and regardless of what level I'm teaching, people go into nursing because of their desire to care for other people. They want to help. And the art of nursing is all about making special that relationship and giving a vehicle for that wanting to help. So what I want to do is help students to value, to recognize, to language, to cherish that aspect of nursing. Not that we need to forget the science piece, of course. You want to be able to know what we're doing scientifically. But it is that use of self that makes us very special in the whole relationship of working with people who are ill.
And isn't it remarkable that you are bringing this to curriculum? Think about it. There, you know, evidence-based curriculum that is now, it's the yin and the yang. It's the component of all of the linear and the circular and the masculine and the feminine. It's that wonderful blending, and you're creating this. And this is the direction, when we speak to other nurses, other holistic nurses, this is the direction that everyone says we must go in.
Mm-hmm.
So congratulations to you and to the wonderful program you're associated with. And we're going to talk about your dean. We're not going to get away without talking about her, but before the next break, could you share with us, you had an art exhibit in Pueblo, Colorado, of your work, 32 pieces of your work. Can you tell us about that? That must have been incredibly exciting.
Yes, it was very exciting for me. I would say it was one of the most validating experiences of my life, in that I was had 39 pieces in this.
Oh, 39, I'm sorry.
Yes, 39 pieces, in three galleries, and it was really all my work. It included biographical icons. It included all of the work that I did in preparation to do the biographical icons. I was so grateful to the curator there, Gina Pierce, for taking, I feel like, a little bit of a risk in showing my work, because I am, you know, not a traditional, haven't followed that traditional art trajectory. And she had my pieces, which were biographical icons, with an icon exhibit that was traditional icons, Byzantine icons, which I was trained in Byzantine iconography, but I don't do that work. It's very impressive work. And then Eastern European contemporary icons. And so I was part of those three ways of thinking about iconography, and it was quite an experience for me.
Oh, I would imagine as an artist, that must have been, that was the nod, you know, that was the wonderful acknowledgement of your work. Lee, we're going to take another short break. I can't believe how quickly the time is just zipping by, but we actually are up to another break. When we come back, we want to talk about, you said that 1999 was a big year, and part of that was that you met the dean of your program, and that was a remarkable and continues to be a remarkable experience and relationship. So when we come back, we're going to talk about your dean, okay? Don't go away.
I don't want my daughter to be labeled.
Hey, my son was just like I was in school. What's the big deal?
My daughter's just going through a phase. She'll get over it.
Kids with learning difficulties don't need excuses. They need help. Today, there are millions of kids with learning difficulties, and they're struggling in school. But the fact is, a lot of these kids are smart. They just learn differently. So if you're the parent of a child who's struggling to learn, the more you learn, the better off your child will be. If you act now and get the proper help, your child can do well in school and in life. So if you think that there's something wrong, do something right now. Get help. For free information on how to help your child, visit www.focusonlearning.org, www.focusonlearning.org, or call 1-888-478-MIND. Do it for your child. Do it for yourself. But do it now. A message from the Advertising Council and the Coordinated Campaign for Learning Disabilities.
Welcome to Flight 38.
How you doing?
Oh, I'm sorry, you can't sit there.
Isn't it open seating?
This is the whites only section.
Whites only?
Mm-hmm. You'll need to move back to the colored section.
Ma'am, I'm a vice president.
Sir, please move back and we'll be on our way.
Fine.
Imagine what America would be like today if Martin Luther King never had a dream. To learn about the Martin Luther King National Memorial Project in Washington, D.C., visit buildthedream.org. A public service message from the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial Foundation and the Ad Council.
And we're back. This is Celebrating Whole Health, and we are indeed today celebrating whole health with Dr. Lee Barbato-Gatos, a holistic nurse, educator, and artist. Before the break, we were talking about a very significant point in your life, Lee. In 1991, I took some notes when we were chatting initially and doing our interview, and you said it was a big year, and one of the very big things that happened in that year to you is that you met the dean of the program of which you are an assistant professor. You said that she invited you and really created an environment for you to be free to be who you are. Now that is probably one of the most exciting statements that any of us can make about our lives. So I want to ask you to go for it and tell us all about this wonderful experience and obviously this very special person in your life.
Yes, that really is true. Dr. Carol Shostel is the dean, that's her name, and she was excited, I would say, about my combination of art and nursing, which that was the first time I had really run into that in academic circles, and it was exciting for me to think that there might be a way to, in my academic world, bring that art forth, which she was the one that encouraged developing a holistic program. She was the one that encouraged the elective on Creative Journey. She has, you know, stuck with all the ups and downs that go with trying to create something new, and always encouraged me and supported me in terms of travel and all of those kinds of things when I needed to present my work. So it was very powerful for me to meet a dean that had that kind of vision and continues to have that kind of vision that is, in fact, holistic, and she is a holistic nurse. So what it pointed out to me is that we all need somebody who can encourage us to be who we are. And what I'm hoping that I do with my work is encourage nurses and nursing students to be who they are. And if they do have this art component, to find some way to bring it in, not lead that divided life that I led.
And not only if they have an artistic component, but they may have other components.
Absolutely.
To their lives. Isn't it the thing that all of us as human beings want, is to be free to be who we are, to be valued for who we are, and to have the unmitigated joy of experiencing and processing the life that we were blessed with? I think enough cannot be said about how urgent it is for academics to begin to recognize this missing component, not only in nursing. I think about the training physicians receive,
mm-hmm.
the training that all academics receive really in the United States. We can talk to PhDs in education who are talking about how they're kind of boxed in.
Mm-hmm.
So in a sense, this is an educational process that you have introduced that has ramifications across many boundaries. Have you done any exploration with bringing this to other educational venues besides the nursing venue?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you bring this up, because there are people, I personally have not, I've pretty well stayed in nursing, but and also in art. Actually, I've done some things in art to encourage them to see the healing aspects of the work, but Parker Palmer is an educator who's done some wonderful work on bringing holism into the classroom, especially in his book, The Courage to Teach. And, of course, Rachel Naomi Remen, who has done such beautiful writing about having a whole and spiritual approach to medicine, as well as Larry Dossey, whose work is, his work particularly is book Recovering the Soul, A Scientific and Spiritual Search. I think that one really brings together so much of what we've actually been talking about how to be in our work, you know, we have to have some recognition of the spiritual aspects and the wholeness of the work. You know, most people have an orientation to their lives which, where there will be one thing emphasized more than another, but what we're all needing is a whole fabric to our life, and to see that it is a whole fabric, and to celebrate that whole fabric.
It is an urgent need within the healing arts. A lot of times when we're discussing these topics with various people, whether they're physicians or nurses, one of the inevitable discussions is, I love the work that I do, but
mm-hmm.
I don't have time for myself. I'm losing myself.
Mm-hmm.
I can't quite get back to myself.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share with us any stories about how this work has transformed the experience for nurses of being able to have the fullness of their life? Do you have any particular examples of how this has actually translated for someone into that fullness?
Well, I do. I could emphasize just a little bit more the story of Lisa Wayman, who lost her son to brainstem glioma at 12. And Lisa, who is one of my thesis students, did art as a way to help her deal with the grief and ultimately the transformation of herself and her family through the loss of her son. That is a most powerful story about how art led her through that process and now is a documentation of that experience.
That is very powerful. Can you share a little bit more? I know that she had a child who was sick, and she began the process, I believe, to, and tell me if I've got this correct, she began it as a way of dealing with his sickness initially.
Right.
And then she...
She did.
Yes.
Her first piece is called Blue Wave, and it was to deal with the grief of the diagnosis, but all the way along his... from the time he was diagnosed with the brainstem glioma until his death, and then beyond his death, she has done art pieces that deal with this. And she actually speaks about this at the Creativity and Madness conference in Santa Fe. She spoke about it. And she speaks about it with this group that I was telling you about. Our group is called Coming Full Circle, where Chris Hall, the hospice nurse, talks about her patients, and Susan Condi also talks about her poetry and how those things have helped both of them deal with their own lives and make them come back to themselves. But I've heard many, many stories, because every time I do a presentation, people come up to me and tell me a story about how art somehow led them back to themselves.
That must be very rewarding for you when you have that kind of feedback.
Oh, yes.
To know that you must keep going, you must keep writing, you must keep publishing and researching. Now, let's go to the core of this, because one of the hallmarks, I think, of the constructive interview is to identify the core or the soul of something. When we talk about art as healing process, art as co-creator of the healing process, what are the specifics? Is it surrender? Is it acceptance? Is it grieving? Is it reaching a point where we recognize that we don't possess things such as our own children? I mean, what specific, there must be some words that have been shared with you that says, well, I got to a place where I reached an understanding of. What are the more specific things that people actually experience, Lee, in this tremendous process?
You know, I think not only my work, but the work of several others demonstrates that that the word that I think you're looking for is meaning. That when we can place a meaning on a difficult life experience, when we can uncover it and know how it fits within the whole fabric of our lives, we feel a peace around it and a healing around it. And so finding the meaning in the experience. And the thing about art is that art is a way of knowing something, and that is different than knowing it rationally or intellectually. Art is a way of knowing something from the inside out and from the gut up. And when we know through art, we can find meanings that we could not otherwise find.
Well, I think that, thank you, you have answered the question in such a way that invites all of us to reflect on the fact that we can understand something. We can even give an intellectual meaning to something.
Mm-hmm.
But until we have the visceral, that untouchable, spiritual, soul-based process of moving through our deeper understanding as human beings of the bigger connectedness and the bigger meaning of all things, that we're left with a desperate terror of what does this mean to my life? You were talking about that at the very beginning. You articulated so beautifully what the big questions are that Joseph Campbell raised. Where do we come from? What are we doing here? And where do we go when we die? And so isn't it that art can invite us to explore in the nonverbal areas answers to that sacred question?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You don't need words with art because you have the experience itself.
Yes, and also how visual art is and how tactile art is and how sensory motor, how NLP and how thalamic brain function, how limbic system connected it is, which is all about the internal unknown unconscious. And in the courses that I've been privileged to be part of, talking about psychoneuroimmunology, looking at how these processes, these parts of our brain, these nonverbal, visual, tactile, sensory motor parts of our brain open up the unconscious mind to see the connectedness between art, which can be tactile or visual or even auditory or even, you know, olfactory, how these wonderful mediums can stimulate the unconscious and give us information. It is just an exciting, celebratory and remarkable comment on the holism that you practice and that so many nurses and hopefully physicians are really striving to practice. You're not going to believe this, Lee. We have our last break coming up.
Oh.
And we're going to step away for 2 minutes. When we come back, I'm going to invite you to talk about, we'll have 4 minutes left, I'm going to invite you to talk about the most important aspect of your integrated work for you and what you'd like to leave us with as thoughts about art as co-creator healer. We'll be right back.
AIDS has created over 14 million orphans worldwide. That's the equivalent of every child under 5 in America with nobody to watch over them. To help, please go to apathyislethal.org. AIDS is preventable. Apathy is lethal.
Brought to you by the United Nations Foundation and the Ad Council.
Hi. I can't come to the phone right now because I'm abusing my children, not just verbally, but physically. I'll get back to you.
If only child abuse were this easy to recognize. If you even suspect abuse, call Child Help USA at 1-800-4-A-CHILD. We've helped millions of people help millions of children. All calls are anonymous and confidential. So call 1-800-422-4453. Child Help USA. Trust your instincts. A public service message brought to you by Child Help USA and the Ad Council.
And we're back for our final few minutes. I wish it could go on forever with Dr. Lee Barbato-Gatos.
What all this has meant for me, in my work, is that it has allowed me to live a life that is more authentic and more congruent with who I really am, this kind of strange-headed, two-headed beast that loves both art and science. So for me, it has been, well, a friend of mine said it was the answer to a life koan for me,
yeah.
To find a way to put nursing and art together. on another level, it is providing a way for me to think about how important it is for people to grab hold of their own life stories. Every life is beautiful and unique. Every life deserves to be told. Every life deserves a witness and deserves a depth of understanding by someone special to that person. And so what I'm hoping in the future to do is to do some writing about that, and to help people find how they can locate their own images for their life stories, and also maybe do some more work in presentations and helping people to do that. But for me personally, I would say that it has made me a much happier person to be able to live congruently and authentically and more wholly, and to love both of those aspects of myself and not deny either one of them.
How beautifully said. And the only other words that I can call to mind that touched that subject in as beautiful a way, as meaningful a way, are the words of Henry David Thoreau, which I would like to close the program with. Henry David Thoreau reflected on life, and he said, "There is no greater longing than the longing to be oneself." And I think that the work that you do is powerful and meaningful and incredibly important to all of us, whether we're nurses, doctors, accountants, or we run a radio program. What is meaningful to each one of us is that we long to be ourselves. We long to celebrate our lives and the gift of a life that has been given to us. I think, Lee, that you have identified a tool, you have identified a process by which you can invite people into this joyful, this extraordinary experience of reaching the authentic, true, whole self, which is what we're all like. Salmon moving upstream, we're all the salmon moving upstream to reach that part of ourselves. So on behalf of everyone listening, I want to thank you, and many, many blessings to you in your work and in your life. And it has been an absolute joy and a tremendous privilege, there's that word again, to have you on the show today. And we thank you so much, and please do come back again.